following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang. Welcome to the True Wealth Radio Show. I am your host, Dave Littlejohn, and joining me in studio, of course, is...
I don't know.
You don't even know?
No, I don't know who I am.
Oh, well,
I've lost all sense of identity.
Well, look, it's, you know, we're
I'm throwing you curveballs right out of the gate,
I don't even know why. Thanks, Matt.
Yep.
Anyway, we're excited to be here on this, the True Wealth Show. On this, of course, the greatest Tuesday you've had all week. And we are also live on YouTube if you want to join us. So, now that we got that out of the way, I've got to tell you, all of our listeners, a quick story.
Okay.
The story goes a little something like this. Hey, Matt, what should we talk about today?
Mm-hmm.
And we have been making some stupid jokes behind the scenes as we are. I can't give the secret out yet. I can't say yet. Okay. But all I can say is that there's going to be changes to the artwork in the office. And so we start talking about how we want to change things. And this starts with, if you've ever heard of the Ron Swanson Pyramid of Greatness.
Yeah.
Okay. And if you haven't heard of this, it's actually pretty hysterical. And there are even posters available. We do not sell these, nor are we formally promoting them, but they are pretty funny. And we got to thinking, like, we need something equivalent in the field of finance.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
And so we got to thinking about that. And then it was like, well, how can we create the financial pyramid of greatness? And for whatever reason, something kind of came out of it that seemed silly. But maybe it wasn't.
I think it might have just been a streak of gold.
Yeah. And so what we came up with is the Stupid Index. Okay. And we came up with, now the Stupid Index was inspired by other things I'm not even going to talk about that it's on YouTube. But it was kind of a matrix for how men and women examine dating. Okay. But we looked at this and said, well, this is more like a matrix for how investors can make decisions and how it impacts their success. Okay. And that became the backdrop for how we started to look at today's show. And we realized that, fortunately for you that are listening, right? I think we're really lucky because most of our listeners are kind of like, we get the smart listeners, right? And so for most of you guys, we're going to talk about some people that make some terrible decisions and maybe identify them. If that happens to be you, the first step in overcoming is recognition.
Oh,
right?
So you want people to be self-aware today and be able to, like, throw the flag on themselves and be like, yeah, that's me. I'm making that stupid decision.
I think it's probably a good start.
Okay.
Right?
That's a hard thing to do. Most people won't do it.
It is. Well, it turns out it's really important in how one becomes more successful as an investor.
Sure.
Okay. So we're going to walk through. It's not really a definitive on the stupid matrix. That's a work in progress for us. But we kind of had in our mind this grid, and it's, you know, how does stupid versus smart and lucky versus unlucky interact with each other, and mm-hmm. where does that leave us?
Yeah, right? And I think the easiest starting place in all of this would be to go to, like, the worst of the worst, right?
Okay.
Like, start in a spot where we're talking about, like, this is the worst type of, I don't even know that you could use the word investor, like, but I think Maybe
it's just the way the person navigates the world of
in
finance.
General.
Yeah. And a little bit of the world in general, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Because, like, if you're listening to this, it's not you. I have good news. It's not you. Unless you're listening to this by accident.
Well, here's a clue that it might be you.
Go
what if
on.
You're the person that thinks that the stock market is just a scam, but then you turn around and you just buy lottery tickets instead? Like, would that be a valid enough, like, example of maybe someone you would title, like, almost the financial fool of sorts, right?
Like, yeah, I think that's pretty fair.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. I don't like to throw the word fool around, too.
I know. I'm really careful with that one, too.
Yeah.
Like, Yeah, biblically they say like, hey, careful with that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, I know. That's
serious.
What I'm saying.
Like, it's like, well, there's no person associated with it. It's a descriptor of a person. And
sure.
You know if it's you. You don't even know if it's you. That's the worst part, right?
Right.
But no, the behavior is so obvious. So, by the way,
lottery tickets are fine. But like, I mean, if you've got like a couple $1 million sitting around and you're bored, just go for it. Have some fun. Sure.
The funny thing about this is it's the idea of like cognitive dissonance and not even being aware that it's happening, right?
Uh-huh.
There's certain things that are inverses of each other. And
yes.
It doesn't make any sense. Like saying, well, the stock market's just a bunch of gambling anyway. And
but then
going
you turn
and gambling,
around and gamble. Yeah.
Right? Like, okay. You're not making any sense, right? You're
hypocrisy.
Yeah. That's a great place to start with. And we're not talking hypocrisy like, you know, telling your kids, do as I say and not as I do, because they're like, well, why do you get to stay up and I don't? It's like, okay, there are reasons, but we're not going to go into this right now. Okay,
right.
We're talking about, well, I'm going to make really stupid decisions and then turn around and justify really stupid decisions with the same justification that I didn't do the other thing. You know, like, wait a second.
So that almost sounds kind of like the person who is like the Facebook keyboard warrior that like wants to throw either politicians under the bus or talk about, you know, how the financial system is failing them.
Mm-hmm.
But in the same moment, they're out there buying, you know, lifted truck on payments with 190,000 miles. It's like,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
There are some decisions that academically speaking and financially speaking, they're just bad decisions.
Right.
Right. And then people will justify and rationalize them to try to say, well, this is why I did it or this is why it's okay. And it's really a tough spot when somebody will defend a bad decision knowing it's a bad decision.
Yeah.
Right. That's a really weird, but like the inability to admit you're wrong, that's the inability to grow. So there you go. Also, incidentally, this falls under, there's an academic name for this, just so that you can feel snooty. It's the Dunning-Kruger effect.
Okay.
Right? Well, actually, that's probably slightly inaccurate, but let's describe what the Dunning-Kruger effect means, right? That is, the less you know about something, the more confident you are. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the more of an expert you become, the lower your confidence level, because you start to realize the complexities. So somebody that is really, really low information is just like, well, if they'd make me president, I'd fix everything. And it's like, right, because everybody that's been president up to this point is a complete idiot. And it's and you know, they just are not doing this right.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, no, it's because there's hundreds of other people in that ecosystem all fighting for what they want too, and everybody's sort of undermining everybody else in the effort.
Well,
right? So yeah. The Dunning-Kruger effect is important to realize. Like, if you think you know everything when you really don't know anything, you'll be overconfident.
Yep.
So there you go. So good start, level one.
Okay, what else? How, like, give me a couple on your end where you're like, that person kind of falls under the umbrella of, you know, really just scraping the bottom of the barrel when it comes to financial literacy.
Oh, you know, that most of it's behaviorally driven is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how if you can have low financial literacy, but reasonable common sense and be okay.
Yep.
Right. The problem is, like, it's really dangerous when you have low financial literacy and low common sense at the same time.
That's
right?
Yeah, that's a bad combo.
Yeah. And so it's like, well, not only do I not have the money, but I bought stuff with money I didn't have that's going to lose value and maybe cost me more in the future, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, well, that's you did what? Yeah. It's like, oh, I bought a broken car that I'm going to need to put even more money into. And I used credit to do it. And I'm not making any money. I'm like, you did what?
Mm-hmm.
Right. What? What level can that ever make sense?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, it did to them. So.
Well, you can't build wealth when you're just running away from the mathematics. Right?
Yeah. And that's the other is, you know, you can't, if you buy liabilities instead of assets,
yeah,
they don't build.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's we've talked about that on the show before.
Sure.
You gotta know the difference between liabilities and assets. And the problem is people will sometimes pretend a liability is an asset because they want it. Right. They'll just rationalize it. And that is a toughie, right? When you are more convinced, like, when you have to be right in your mind instead of right in reality, then
yeah.
You got a problem.
Well, and sometimes, you know, it's a really fine line, right? I'm going to go buy this thing for maybe even my business, right? And yes, it is going to open up opportunities and it's going to make you money. But you got to also look at what did you pay for it versus what could you have paid for it if you were being more responsible. And so it's like, it could be an asset and also a liability all at the same time, depending on how do the numbers number behind the scenes.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that fall into the, did it really make sense, right? And at a baseline, if the math gets really complicated and you're thinking to yourself, well, if I can just add more variables to it, that's going to somehow solve the problem. I would suggest that's the opposite of what needs to happen, right? What you really need to figure out is, how do I understand this so well that they aren't variables anymore, right? Because
yeah.
The more unknowns you have, the more likely that it's probably not going to work.
Sure.
Anyway,
yeah.
It just is what it is. So if that is the first level, Matt.
Yes.
The person that is willfully blind.
Yep. They're not opening.
Yeah,
they're not opening the Roth IRA. They're opening the bar tab.
Okay. That sounds like, so this is behaviorally driven. And the problem is that person will then go out and say that they were victimized.
Sure.
Right? By their own decisions.
Yeah. Well, if only the government would just stop taxing me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's there's another really obvious one. If there's an accountability gap, and guess what? If you're defensive hearing this, look in the mirror.
Mm,
right?
Yep.
If there's an accountability gap, you know, I can't hear that. It's like, or you're changing the channel. It's like, well, I guess you're gone. But for the rest of you, if you're thinking to yourself, that isn't me, it's like, well, hopefully that's true. But give yourself an honest assessment. Right?
Yeah.
That's where we need to be. So. Anyway, there's the first segment already in the books, if you can believe that.
Is it really?
Yep, look at the clock. And
I feel like
we
need everyone on YouTube, though, who's listening and watching this to drop some comments on, like, what's the next layer of this thing?
Oh, that would be fun. Yeah, if you're live, tell us, what do you think is the next level here? And I think, how many levels do we have today?
We're going to keep getting better as the day goes on.
Oh, so we're gonna ascend to at least level 6, maybe even higher. But
yep.
We got to grab a break first. So okay. Stick around. We'll do that. When we come back, we're going to talk about how can you level up your financial game, right? And the good news is, all of you guys are listening, you're not level 1. So we're going to go on. All right, we'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show, where we are talking about the various levels of financial stupidity, if you can believe that.
Are we going to start screaming at people?
No, mm-hmm. No, maybe.
They'll hear us better.
No, we'll start.
Okay, clench your fists. You got them clenched, and I need you to start pounding on the desk here.
This is
here
not
and,
happening.
Okay.
No. We are going to instead talk to our listeners now, so you know we'll deal with the tech as we need to deal with it. We got a show to do, Matt. Come on.
We're talking about the different levels of financial literacy.
I think it's financial
and application,
like, stupidity, right?
And luck.
And so
it's a little bit of luck.
No, it's kind of climbing the scale. If you start, like, our listeners are not level 1, which is kind of imbecile, right? So let's kind of climb up from there.
So we're going from imbecile to, like, lucky idiot?
That's level 2.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Now explain to me lucky idiot.
This person maybe bought Tesla back in 2018. They made a bunch of money. They think they're the next Warren Buffett. They go and they tell everyone how great they've done. And they say things like, you know, who needs diversification? Just concentrate everything and it'll go to the moon. But they've never actually been through a bear market. They only got in when it was hot and then they feel like they know something. So that person's management style is just pray and hope it works.
Well, the funny thing is that this can be a lot of people, because if you've never gone through a down cycle,
yeah,
it's easy to start thinking, oh, this is easy.
Well, think about it, right? Like, luck can make you money one time, right? But how do you keep it? That's a discipline set. And so
yeah,
it's very different.
Yeah, luck is not typically repeatable.
Right.
Right? And so that's the issue. Now, sometimes luck, I'm not going to tell you luck doesn't play a role.
Oh, luck plays
right?
a huge role.
Like
the Mariners games, you see it the other night? This guy steps up to the plate. This is like big time playoff baseball, trying to go to a World Series. And this guy has not had a good batting average, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's struggled for years. He's been in a slump. And he finally starts to do a little bit better. And he's going up against the best pitcher in Major League Baseball.
Okay.
He hits a home run.
Yeah.
Takes his team up one run. And then the very next inning, he comes back up to bat. And guess what? He hits another home run. They end up winning the game.
Okay.
What are the odds of that? Luck can strike twice. You're the worst batter on the team and you hit two runs.
What if it was the pitcher being unlucky? Just for fun. I'm just playing the other side of it now.
I mean, I feel like, yeah.
You're like, maybe it was both.
Right? It had to be a combo of both.
I mean, that's got
to
get in your head when you're like, this guy never hits. What's it's right? got shelled. And it's like, again?
Again? Yeah. Yeah. Like, how do you feel losing when you, this eighth batter up takes you to the yard twice? Yeah.
I feel like that is, well, it's a fun example. It's definitely illustrative of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's far less frequent financially, right? You know, that somebody that, like, you just kind of keep getting dumb lucky.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've seen it a few times, though.
I've seen it. There are times when it's just lucky. Just is.
Yep.
But the problem is when somebody thinks that the luck is skill.
Ooh, it's a dangerous, dangerous beast.
That's the thing. It's like you got to recognize sometimes. And here's the thing. Like, I could tell you, I have gotten lucky before. I have certain investor skills, too. And sometimes when they both come together, it's just like you get
the
home
Holy
runs.
Grail. Yeah.
Yeah. You just get home runs. You know, but there are also times when those things come together, but it's not luck, right? So you take skills and you go up there and you strike out.
Yep.
So that's just the nature of, right? So that one, yeah, the lucky idiot. I like the names of some of the things we come up with. It's more like the sort of blissfully ignorant lucky.
What's like the next step up from the lucky idiot? Like, how do we graduate to the next highest level here?
So this one is counterintuitive, but I really like this. There's this the concept of the person that becomes like super analytical and like really hyper overthink stuff.
Okay.
There are
analysis paralysis.
Well, or just over analysis. Here's what I have seen. This is particularly hard. Now, if you're an engineer, I need you to hear this, right? Engineers tend to love the equation to resolve. They want order, right? It need all sure. of the things need to balance. And I've seen engineers that have tried to somehow hack the algorithm of the entire stock market. And if I could just do enough research, if I could just turn another page, get a little bit more information, I can somehow perfect the positions that I choose and get a perfect investment strategy. And what I will tell you is no, right? That you'll torture yourself on that. And it's not that you're stupid at that point, but the overthinking, the problem is the variables move.
And they move faster than you can record your data.
Well,
and,
it's also really, really big, right? There's a lot of participants in the market. There's a lot of caveats to what's going on. And so when somebody gets way into the analysis, what can happen sometimes is they won't make decisions at all. They just get paralyzed, right? Sometimes you have to look at it as, this is the best decision I can make with the data that I have.
Yeah.
But folks will say, well, I just need a little bit more and a little bit more. And then the decision gets deferred. And before you know it, the opportunity is kind of passed by because you're still waiting for just the right time.
Yep.
And that's an issue, right? Is the idea that you can get perfection in the market, I think, tortures some people. And I ask me how I know, right? I lived that world for a while. I was really tortured by the whole, I want to figure the market out. But after over 20 years of doing this, it's not happening.
Yeah, I feel like that same person could be the person who's always trying to, like, wait for the market to fully crater, right? And they're like, oh, I know it's coming. And then the market starts to peel back, and it's, you know, actually a decent buying opportunity. But then the fear starts to sink in, right? And so I think a lot of that overthinking is based in fear. You know better, but you're fearful. Yeah.
Well, it's fear, or sometimes it's based on ego, too, right? Well, I'm smart. I'm going to figure this out. And that can also be a gotcha. Now, do you need to be smart? No, I think it's helpful, right? But I think that you need to also recognize that there are things that are outside of one's control. And it can be maddening if you seek to control the things that are uncontrollable.
I think one of the biggest mistakes some people make is they look at this and they're like, if I just study it long enough and look at it long enough, I can crack a code, right? And so I can figure out some way that's always going to work for me. And it's like this cheat code in the market. And if I just study it long enough, I'm going to see this discrepancy and I'm going to tap into that every time and just make a bunch of money.
You know what?
I've talked to a lot of people that think that way.
I know. Well, here's one of the best proofs that that's not happening, right? Look at all the proliferation of artificial intelligence and all the data access that it has, and it still gets stuff wrong.
Yep.
Right? Because that's the nature of a market. I've said this before, but just listen closely. Markets abhor exploits.
Yep.
Right? This is why is one of the easiest ways to spot nonsense in the investment landscape is when somebody says, oh, I'm going to sell this performance of do this and you make tons of money, right? And then you have to say, well, did it really happen? Or are you using some kind of audit trail you invented from, you know, another, really from data fitting back data?
Yeah.
Right? Oh, okay. Well, I know what happened now. So let's say, well, if you would have done all these things, it would have turned out amazing. It's like, sure, but did you?
You're like, congratulations, it worked in 1996 and in 2017. Like,
well, and the funny thing is when somebody says, hey, we've got the code that breaks the market and just follow us and you'll be fine. Go, well, if they had the code, why would they give it away? Why not just print money themselves working the code? Mm-hmm. Why are they training everybody else for this? And when somebody says, oh, they're just really generous, and like, that totally makes sense.
Yeah.
That they want you to pay for it. You know, because, well, you know, you have to have skin in the game or you don't take it seriously, right?
Mm-hmm.
Reasons why you have to pay for it, but, well, why do you need to sell it in the first place?
Yeah.
I'm like, these things, they don't make a lot of sense to me.
What does make sense in this whole environment, David? How do we make more sense of everything? We're talking about the overthinker. I feel like we can graduate to the next level here.
Yeah, I was waiting for the segue. What does make sense? I'll say, how about, you know, rules, mm-hmm. discipline, those things make sense. And we can talk more about that. Let's talk about
Being like a slow and steady Eddie.
Okay. You know what? I'm going to sit back and watch how you do this. How, like, here's why I'm laughing. I'm laughing because we have this set of things that we have kind of pre-scripted here, mm-hmm. and I'm like, I don't know how this is gonna go.
It's
really a different try. It's the opposite of what we just talked about.
It is.
You know, you have these people that overthink everything, and then I think you have the first level of what I would call effective investors. And this, you should be delighted to hear this, everybody. This category works just fine.
I would say that of all the investor types out there, this one probably makes up about 80% of. That's steep.
I don't know. It makes
60-70% of investors are in this category.
And I would say that most investors at some time in their life have been in this category. They may not stay there, but they have been here.
Correct.
At some point.
Yep.
You know, or they will be.
It's a good starting place.
Well, yeah. So talk to me about. So explain to me this, the next level. You're not overthinking anymore. And notice we said this is a higher plane, right? This is a more successful investor level than the overthinker.
Right. This is your 401k hero, right? Yeah. They set it and they forget it.
It's the very little thinker. Crazy as that sounds, right?
Yeah.
It's like set it and forget it.
Yeah. They're like, hey, I got this workplace retirement plan and my employer's going to throw 3% in and I'm going to throw 7% in and that's 10% of my wage. See in 30 years that, and they don't do anything. They just, maybe they look at it once a year.
Yeah.
And then they're like, it'll be fine. They don't, the market's down 20%. Whatever. I'm putting more money in. Mm-hmm. Can't do anything about it, can I? And they just ride it out. And they wake up in 30 years, and most of the time they're in a pretty good spot.
Yeah.
Now, am I saying don't pre-plan and don't see a financial advisor until the day that you're about to retire? No. But lot of people...
Because accumulation isn't a plan in and of itself.
No, it's not.
But it's a good part of... It's a good start, right?
It's the bulk majority of what you're doing.
Yeah. Here's a funny thing. It turns out having extraordinary investment success or really high income and not spending, overspending... kind of fixes a lot of plan mistakes. Mm-hmm. Right? Like if you don't plan real well, it's like you'll be forgiven for that because you just sort of brute forced your way to an acceptable outcome. But it could be better.
Yeah.
You know, so and I personally, I don't like the idea of being inefficient. I feel like if you're going to be a good steward, then you need to work well with the stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So anyway, that one, you want a quote? I want a quote, yes.
Okay. Consistency beats genius 99 times out of 100.
Yeah, I would think that's probably true. Because the other one is, I think genius is more rare than people realize.
Yeah.
Right. The number of Warren Buffetts in the world compared to everybody else, there's very few of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although, interestingly enough, if you were to ask me, is it possible to be the next Warren Buffett? I would say, yeah, just not if you've got, you know, 15 years left.
Right.
Right. You know, Warren Buffett started.
He started at like 12.
Yeah. Super young, like as a kid by today's standards, mm-hmm. and has just been grinding ever since and has seen a lot of systemic change in the marketplace itself.
Was it gumball machines that he started with or something?
Yeah, gumball machines and like I thought pinball machines maybe.
Yeah.
But something like
that.
And
then he sold that business and then took whatever money that was from that and bought a piece of property. I think he literally graduated from like selling his gumball machine business to buying property.
Yeah. Well, story for another day. And if you're interested in it, I would say go leave a comment in the in our comment section or send us an email at info@littlejohnfs.com. And, you know, we may do more of an unpacking of this. You know, Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger were pretty famous for what they called their multidisciplinary approach to investing. Mm, and so we could talk about that another time. But speaking of time, I don't know how we did this so quick, but we got to take a break. We're up against the clock. So let's do that. We'll grab a break. When we come back, more levels to go over, and we will explain what we can. But first, you know, commercials and stuff. So stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Now, help me out. So you were trying to explain this to me because I don't know that I get too cerebral. You know how that is, right?
Yes.
So,
yes.
Okay. So what's your point?
My point is, David, that investors need a plan. This is where we graduate to, right? We talked about the person that just throws it in a 401k, they forget it. What's the next step up? It's someone that has a plan. They're doing things with intention. So they have some goals. They've got their cash reserves. They're operating on a little bit different level. Do you kind of want to talk about what that might look like?
I suppose.
Give me your best interpretation of this investor with a plan.
Well, just like it sounds. But once you start doing things with intention, mm-hmm. I think the good things start to happen because the behaviors with intention behind them, they stack, right? If you just allow stuff to sort of happen to you, then you may unintentionally still have some good outcomes. I mean, that's the benefit of like a retirement plan.
Yeah.
Right? Hey, you just kind of put it in there and let the magic of compound interest do its thing.
I think the main difference in this example versus what we just talked about is this person isn't just cashing in on their retirement plan opportunities, right? I kind of hinted at it. They have different kind of buckets of money. So they have a big cash reserve. And then that allows them to maybe take more risk in the future, buy that asset that is undervalued, that's not locked up in a retirement account, right? Like this is where rentals come into place. This is where buying a business comes into place. There's a lot of different ways that you can use money outside of a retirement account to grow your wealth. And it's intentional, right? They have a plan. They know what they want, and they're not afraid to delay a little bit of gratification and wait a little bit to get that thing that they want. So they're like, you know what? This is going to take 5 years, but the math, and 5 years from now, it'll pencil and we'll be able to do it. And then they just sit there and they wait patiently. Well, they don't sit there. They're working and waiting patiently. Working and waiting. How about that?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, as I listen to these things, I'm trying to figure out how to put this into language that our listeners and our viewers are going to say, like, yep, that makes sense, right? Everybody talks about planning all the time. And my sense is that it becomes a generic term, okay? When I think about what planning is where all these different things come together, and then it starts to look like luck, but it's not, right? And I actually, what bugs me about when people say, well, luck is just opportunity meeting preparation. I said, well, that's clever, haha. But sometimes luck actually is luck. Right. You know, the market conditions are you're in the right place at the right time and that sort of stuff works out. What a plan does is it gives you sort of a structure, and a plan helps you to be more efficient. Right. Plans tend to get you there faster or keep you there longer. Right. Because you're starting to incorporate other things besides chance into the mix. That's where efficiency starts to play. Like, you're OK, well, let's navigate taxes properly. Right. Let's understand the different types of assets and how they mix together. Let's look opportunistically at times when things are either really overvalued or really undervalued. And you need to know how to assess value. Right. Those things come into the planning scope.
Yeah.
Right? There's not a ton of people that run around right now and say, oh, real estate's really a great value. So now it may be a value relative to 5 years later, but a value compared to where it was 5 years ago. Harder to, you know, do the math on that one.
Yeah.
And it's hard in a period when economic data is slowing down and job loss is starting to creep up.
Yeah.
Because, you know, AI is causing changes in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of moving parts. Well, the plan doesn't fix the moving parts, but it does key you into, well, here are markers and things. So I'm gonna, you know, my behaviors will sort of be predefined. Mm-hmm. You want to know what I think that one of the biggest differentiators is? It's not really on our list. People that are intentional, they're not ruled by the emotion of the process, right? There's a discipline to the process that's less at sway to the, I just feel like doing this. And so I think that is really important, is that you kind of develop maybe not a sense of rules, but a sense of boundaries around how you invest and how you treat your money so that you can execute on a plan.
Yeah.
And that might be a really good way to think about it, too. It's like, does your money have boundaries?
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, the popular psychology term of the day, boundaries. Oh, we're doing that all over? Like, yeah, sorry. You know, everybody else on YouTube talks about it. So now we drop the stupid keyword.
Can you advance even past that point? Does it go any higher, David?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, do you want to talk to me a little? Like, how do you keep getting better than that, where your money has a plan, you know, it's purposeful? Maybe it's like when you achieve the plan, right? Like, what happens when you actually achieve it?
Yeah. So what happens when you have a outline and you really want to get the last one in there? The answer is, you had a plan. Okay. And so when you execute on the plan, then you start to figure out, well, why did it exist in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
Why was that plan relevant and what's it trying to do?
Yeah.
There is a higher level when you're no longer analyzing things. You are philosophizing about them. Right.
Okay.
And so I like the idea of the financial philosopher. It's like, what motivates me to do things?
Mm-hmm.
Right. We've talked about this on the air before. What do I say about the game of more?
You can't win that game.
Right. It's an impossible game.
Right.
The game of more will actually end up being demotivating at some point,
mm-hmm.
because you'll realize, like, all I'm doing is getting on the treadmill and running harder and longer.
Yeah.
Okay. For some people, their ego is such that that game of more consumes them enough that they never really step back and understand why. They just keep playing it. Okay. But there's a self-mastery element in the money philosopher. Right. Now, we had a discussion in the office here because there was a, who would we typically say kind of lives in the financial philosopher realm? Like, what would it be, an iconic figure?
Are you talking about like Ron Swanson, the man himself?
No, but I love it. Well, I'll tell you who I think of when I hear the term the Oracle of Omaha.
Okay.
Okay. That's what Warren Buffett's been called for years.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I think he's a kind of cool example of somebody that really thinks about the markets in a different way than most people do. Yeah, he said something super interesting, just the way he said it one time. Fairly apolitical. He is politically involved, but he's not really, he doesn't choose a team, right? He's kind of a free agent politically. And he talks about the federal government as a partner. And then he says, well, it's a business partner, and you don't really choose them, and you don't really get to dictate the terms, but you get this partner either way. And so we have to treat this like this is the partner's share. And sometimes the rules change, and the partner takes a different share, and we need to be advantageous about how we work within that construct. And other times it's less advantageous, and we adapt our decisions appropriately.
Yeah.
I thought, well, what a really
profound
way of looking at things. It's like such a straightforward approach to this. Is just, this is the partner that we have right now. I could complain about it, or I could simply deal with it. And so there's a real pragmatism to that. And I think the pragmatism is what I sort of draw to, because it doesn't look at the market as a giver or a taker, and it's not a winner loser thing as much as it is just a, this is what the market gives us.
This is completely off topic, but I'm going to ask it because I can. You have a business, you're starting out, and you get to pick in their prime, you know, youth, Charlie Munger or Warren Buffett to be in business with. Who do you pick and why? Or do you even have a good answer for that? And you're like, yeah, give me either one.
I don't have a great answer, because I know right now I probably know a little bit more about Charlie Munger than Warren Buffett.
Same. Yeah.
You know, and so as a result, I
kind of tend to lean that way.
I have a tendency to think Warren Buffett.
Really?
Well, here's why, right? If you really want to unpack it, and this is because I'm naive.
Okay.
Like this, I don't know enough, but if I had to go with what I had right now.
Yeah, with your gut feeling.
Charlie Munger frequently defers to Warren Buffett.
Oh, okay.
Right? Even though he was his senior in years, mm-hmm. and he was sort of his senior, I believe, in terms of his educational background.
Right.
But he used to talk about how Warren Buffett is just sort of a unique set of genius.
Hmm.
Both of them seem to have a unique way to be sort of emotionally detached from what they were doing.
Yeah.
And so that's a unique partnership that I saw over the years with them. And so that's a harder one to.
Who was the main numbers guy when analyzing deals and trying to figure out valuations and when to pull the trigger?
I think, I'm not certain. I think when they got together, Warren Buffett was a real like deep value buyer.
Yeah,
he was buying things that were sort of broken and trying to patch them up, and Charlie Munger really sort of convinced him to do more examination of his multi-factor analysis, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or the multidisciplinary.
I think a lot of it
approach.
Is. I don't think it was ever fully transparent, like how they valued companies, and like I think that's kind of the secret sauce, right? Behind.
Oh, literally.
Yeah,
literally.
And so.
By the way, this is a great way to finish. Like we should do this. Let's take our last break and let's come back to this topic. I think if you guys stick around for this, because this is really important to understand philosophically. But also, it's really important to understand mathematically, like whether or not, like, hey, should I be buying an S&P 500 index, or should I be thinking like Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger? Stick around. We're going to uncover that. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
We got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, well, that'll come later. Hey, guys, welcome back to the home stretch of the True Wealth Show. Dave Littlejohn with
Matt Dixon.
Okay, we are. This is not on our script. Okay, so we're totally off the cuff. Not we're off the cuff a lot.
Hey, you know what?
One,
it brings us back to old times. We went a lot of years without having any script at all.
Yeah, or without an outline even.
It was like the Wild Wild West and a six shooter.
What he said. So we're going to. I want to address one of the biggest questions that there's not a great answer for. Okay. There's two major camps, and Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger, Charlie Munger's passed away. Right. So he's gone. Warren's still around. I think he's like 96 or something like remarkable. But so they run Berkshire Hathaway. It's become a ginormous fund. The market routinely looks to them for an assessment of how the overall economy is looking. And what Charlie Munger would say is that the markets are not efficient. It's just that there seems to be a gap in the way people understand how to value it.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a unique way of determining value, and it was on a case-by-case basis. The multidisciplinary method meant they had to learn how to value a company from lots of different perspectives and then tried to figure out which perspectives aligned with and explained the trends and whether or not those were likely to improve or not. And so they had a whole different approach to research, and it was, they had a lot of checklists where, hey, we can make our way down through these things and confirm. But then some of it was just, we got to really think through what this is. And they had a remarkable ability to just understand the way those companies fit into the universe, the way that they made money or didn't, and how they could stay in front of trends and become more valuable. And they just, when they made decisions, it was really, you know, they had to do deep research. And when they finally decided to do it, they moved big chunks of money and they were really successful. And not like a little successful. I mean, like, if the normal bell curve is, hey, one standard deviation, one sigma, right? If you're beyond a standard deviation, they were 5, 6, almost 7 sigmas out in terms of outperformance over decades. That's not explainable by math.
Superhuman.
Right? It doesn't really math when you have other people out there saying, well, the moment the markets are efficient, buy an index and everything's going to be perfect. And then they'll give you all of the data why that's the case.
Yeah. Right?
And it's interesting because the data makes a lot of sense when you see it. But then you see somebody that is an outlier that seems to continuously reproduce that result. And then I have to ask, so which one is it? Is it or isn't it efficient?
I feel like that's level 12, right? Like if you reach that level, you just rule over everyone else.
This is where like level 3, when you are a just a data seeker and mm-hmm. you get a decision paralysis. Well, the problem is when you're trying to create an algorithm that works every time.
Yeah.
Versus when you get to level 12 or whatever you're going to call it, and your research is at a level where it's truly at a level of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And you can still get it wrong is the thing. Just because you understand an investment doesn't make it a good investment.
Well, but and then there's
understand that maybe it would be. That's important.
Well, and then there's some things that are so out of your control. You could have been right. This is the crazy thing. You could be right. The company's way undervalued. But then something happens at a macro level and it gets swept up in the scrum of, you know, bad news, right? Like, mm-hmm. oh, this country bombed that country. The stock drops 20%. It's like, well, nothing changed inside of the company, potentially. All the same buyers are still there of the product and everything. But you just got unlucky. Remember, this show was about luck,
yeah,
timing, and being stupid.
Yeah,
so.
It was luck, smarts, and stupidity.
Yep.
Right? And how they all interact.
So, David, what happens if someone's listening to this and they're like, you know, I am stupid, or I am smart, but I feel like I have to depend on luck because I just don't know enough, you know. How do they get a hold of us if they just want a second opinion? They want to come in and take a test, an IQ test, to see if they're smart enough to do this on their own. What do they do?
I don't know. I need a number for a competitor. I'm like, I don't have this IQ test.
We'll make one. Come into the office.
I got nothing.
I'll make one up on the spot. I'll give you 10 questions as long as you get a...
It's really funny. I mean, I know where you're kind of going with this, and I appreciate it. It's sort of this, if you're out there thinking to yourself, hey, I'm over my head, or I don't want to deal with this, but I know I need to, then you can call us, and we're happy to help. And yeah, our number is 541-375-0898. I think the bigger one, when I look at this stuff, is kind of a, you know, figure out where you're at and figure out where you're going with this stuff. When we try to look at the markets, you know, like we had an investment committee meeting today. Now, I'm not going to make a recommendation. I'm going to tell you one of the things that we talked about. And it's, you have to look at the market a little bit different. And we're looking at the way job losses are increasing because of artificial intelligence.
Yep.
Okay. And we say, well, that should, on one hand, make the companies that are able to convert jobs into technology more profitable.
Correct.
Right? Okay, well, that could make those companies more valuable. But What's the flip side of that?
The flip side is all the people that are out of jobs no longer have money to spend at the corporations that, once employed them, and so then the economy starts to sour.
Right. And then there's another element. If companies replace people with technology, what if something goes wrong?
Yep.
Okay. Now these companies have to deal with
liability.
Liability. And if there's liability, that also means for somebody else there is opportunity and risk management.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so we started to look at how does the economy change with those as backdrops. Okay. And this is an example of how you philosophically navigate through what the markets are becoming, trying to identify trends. Because that's going to be really important to understand in the future. You know, you don't want to go buying horses and buggies when Henry Ford's building cars.
Right.
Right. And whatever that is today, we don't want to be buying the next horse and buggy. Mm-hmm. We want to be buying what's coming.
Correct.
Okay. So those are tricky things, but they come into the analysis. And that is part of what we believe as a firm, is that there are times when you kind of hold chunks of the market because it's efficient enough. There are other times that we are seeking to skate to where the puck is going. And that's not about trying to trust the market to be perfectly efficient. It's trying to say, we want to spot an emerging trend and go look for that.
Yep.
So anyway, today you get kind of an interesting take on all of it, right? You get the different levels of investor. Are you willfully blind? Mm-hmm. Are you just getting started? Are you burying yourself in information thinking you can solve an unsolvable problem? Or are you set it and forget it? Are you getting engaged in planning, or are you really trying to take it to the next
level? There's a lot of good tools on our website. Like, if someone wants a soft way to start learning and just educating themselves, go to the website. It's littlejohnfs.com.
That's it. So as we look at the clock, I know we're about out of time. What I'm going to tell everybody is, hey, you know, if you don't have somebody in your life that is helping you with this stuff, give us a call. Matt already gave you our website and everything. You got the phone number, 541-375-0898. So check it out. But we got to run for this time. So until next time, I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you've been listening to True Wealth.